The Athletic.
I hope anybody's not stupid enough to write us off.
It's Two Stars time. This is the Nottingham Forest podcast from The Athletic, where once a week we get together to discuss all the big news and notes from Trentside. On this episode, we get the inside track on Derby County ahead of Friday's game. Ryan rifles Reds past Rotherham. We react to the Reds' latest win. We'll answer your questions and a series of accusations and recriminations await as we ask, did they really play for Forest? And are these clues definitely accurate? Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic, this is Two Stars. Hey, listener, thanks for joining us a little earlier than usual. It's Matt Davis-Adams here alongside The Athletic's Forest correspondent, Paul Taylor. And, of course, joining us, as ever, Big Evil, Nick Miller.
Big Evil? My God. Are you going to run out? I mean, there's been a lot of wrestling over the years. Presumably that you're not going to run out of any of these nicknames, are you?
No, but oddly, I've gone for another Undertaker nickname. We've had the feed on before, So, I mean, I've had about 3 hours sleep, so we'll use that as mitigation. Anyway, let's stop wasting time. We need to get on to the big game on Friday night. On the other side of this, we'll be joined by The Athletic's Derby County correspondent, Ryan Conway. Listener, you're probably aware that the Brian Clough Trophy will be up for grabs at the ironically named Pride Park on Friday night. Joining us now to give us the scoop on Forest Friday night opponents is the Athletic's Derby County correspondent, Ryan Conway. Ryan, you were on hand for the win against Huddersfield on Tuesday night. Was it a deserved third victory in four for the Rams?
Yeah, very much so. It was, you know, the definition of a professional performance. You know, it was on a demo where they got a goal from a set piece, they got a goal from a counter-attack. They shut up shop in the last 15 minutes and kept a clean sheet, got out of there without too much bother, really.
Well, what's been the secret behind this upturn under Wayne Rooney? Because it has been really impressive the way that he's managed to turn things around, because it was a pretty unhappy camp under Philip Cocu.
Yeah, so I think there's quite a lot of things that have gone on, actually. I think if you look at, in the January transfer window, some of the players that left, you look at Dwayne Holmes who departed, and Rooney had made it clear that he wasn't a player that fit the culture that Rooney was trying to build. I think having a very defined style of play has helped. They kind of, you know, at the beginning, they worked the ball out wide and tried to get Colin Kazim-Richards involved. And then when they played much more expansive teams, they tried to keep the ball on the deck and had Kazim-Richards drop deep and have runners go around him. So it didn't matter what the style was, they had a singular focal point in Kazim-Richards. And under Philip, they kind of outsmarted themselves a lot. And they were kind of yellow-bellied under Cocu. They were soft. They had their lunch money taken from them too many times. And under Wayne, that isn't the case. They're a real tough, sort of gritty team.
What about Steve McLaren? What kind of the form upturn in form has kind of obviously coincided with Rooney taking over, but also with roughly speaking with McLaren coming in as well. What kind of impact has he had?
He's on the training ground pretty much every day, but doesn't really get active. It's Rossini, Walker, and Given that lead most of the sessions. McLaren kind of wanders around with his notebook, and then after the sessions, all the coaches and McLaren kind of congregate and formulate a plan, what's going well, what's not going well, what they need to work on, and all those sorts of things. Now, Rooney's still the guy making the decisions, but McLaren is someone that is offering his input pretty regularly, and it's input Rooney's happy to have. I think there are some staples of my old McLaren Derby sides in there. I think going back to a 4-3-3 where the third midfielder is more deep-lying rather than a more advanced midfielder has helped keep a lot of balance in midfield. And then when Derby have been chasing games, they've been playing like this 4-2-4, which was a McLaren staple under Derby when they were chasing games. So there are a few, you know, callbacks to that era in there. But I think by and large, he remains in more of an advisory role, I would say, rather than anything practical.
Ryan, I wonder how you find the dynamic of being a journalist covering a football club and getting involved in the kind of rivalry between Derby and Forest. Do you become embroiled in it when you get involved with a football club? Do you build a relationship with that club and want to see them do well in situations like this?
Yeah, it's funny. When the Forest fan threw himself in the river, it was really funny, to be honest. And I still think about that a lot. It's just really funny. It's strange because obviously this is only my second season. This will be third Forest game I've covered, and it will be the second one with no fans. So that kind of sucks, to be honest. But yeah, it's difficult not to get involved because you're aware of how much the game means, and I think, you know, I am king of the shit post on Twitter. and memes and all that kind of stuff. So you have a little bit more fun with it, and it is fun and it is funny. You always remember not to take it too far because you still got a responsibility. But yeah, it's, you know, fun is fun, and I enjoy that side of things. Being part of that Derby community, you realise how much it means to those fans, as I'm sure you do with the Forest, you know, guys and girls. So yeah, it is fun to be a part of while, you know, you still got to remember you've got a job to do and responsibilities and stuff like that. But yeah, it is fun. And I still think about Chris Martin's 97th minute goal and the guy throwing himself in the river a lot. That still gives me a lot of amusement.
In case anybody missed that, this was last season that a Forest fan, for some reason, jumped in the canal opposite Nottingham Station, thinking that Forest had won the game, didn't wait for full time. Forest then tweeted, "Goal for Derby, brackets, Martin, 90 plus 7. Close brackets, and the officer who dug him out had to give him the bad news. Right, a couple more before we let you go. Here's a question we've had from Gareth on Twitter. He wants to know, which Derby players should we be looking out for? He says Nathan Byrne worries him.
Yeah, Nathan Byrne has been one of Derby's best signings in the last couple of seasons, to be honest. You know, they picked him up from Wigan for basically a bus pass, and he was at the start not as flamboyant going forward as Jaden Bogle, but defensively was much more astute. His delivery from open play and from corners recently has been absolutely excellent. Really does know how to dig out a cross out on the right. Kazim Richards has become a cult hero, not only because of his personality, but his play on the field has been genuinely very, very good. Derby were after a replacement for Chris Martin, not only just in terms of a striker, but in terms of that mould of striker as well. Kazim Richards came into a lukewarm reception would be polite, if I'm honest. It was an underwhelming signing at the time, and he didn't get many minutes at the start under Koku. Rooney's used him as a target man, got runners going around him, and he's a problem out there. I think he's technically much better than you think he is as well. He has a deceptively good weight of pass on him, and is a bully in the air. So he's someone that I think needs to be accounted for, because he won't just stand up there and wait for balls. He'll drop deep, get involved, flick balls around the corner, and he'll go. Lee Buchanan at left back. Both Derby's fullbacks are really, really strong. Lee Buchanan has improved massively from last season. Going forward, he's a real issue. Can get a little unstuck defending 1v1 at times. That's something he's still learning. Going forward, he's hard to stop.
All right, final question. Going to have to ask you for a prediction, please.
5-0.
Forest don't normally score that many.
I think Derby will win. There's just a weird professionalism about them. Sort of this almost early 2000s German efficiency that they're going through at the moment, where they kind of win games 1-0. It's very robust. It's fine. You know, last night was 2-0, and it was all, oh, okay, that was good, wasn't it? That was an easy, digestible 90 minutes to get through with no issues. And Rooney has them really well drilled. I know Forest at the minute are a little bit up and down, winning games kind of in the same manner Derby are, by the odd goal and things like that. So I don't think it'll be an expansive game. You know, buckle up for an attritional game of football, folks. But I think Derby will win 1-0.
Well, listen, Ryan, I would say enjoy the game on Friday, but that would be incredibly disingenuous of me. I do, though, genuinely mean thank you for coming on and joining us today.
No, don't worry about it. Thank you for having me. And, you know, for far too long, the Forest propaganda machine on The Athletic has rolled full steam ahead on post. But that is coming to an end, and I'm here to bring balance. I am like Batman.
Ryan Conway there, a good man with a bad job, I think it's fair to say. So it was 1-1 when the teams met at the City Ground in October. Forest's last win at Pride Park was in 2015, 2-1 under Stuart Pearce. Try and dig out listener a piece that Nick wrote around that game, which was absolutely brilliant. Is that your favourite memory of Derby away, Nick?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So the piece that I wrote for the website called The Set Pieces, and it's sort of more about my dad than Forest v Derby. Basically, my family was having a bit of a bad time around then. My dad had a heart attack a few months before that game. We then went to the game. It was terrible for about an hour, and then, as we'll all remember, Benny Osborne scored the goal, which I think is... even devoid of the context for me, is would probably be my favourite Forest v Derby goal, maybe even favourite Forest goal ever. But with the family circumstances, me and my dad went for a pint after the game, and we kind of said to each other, we probably shouldn't ever go to another Forest Derby game ever again after that, which we kind of obviously ruined in the next year. I think we might have lost 5-0 the next year. I think it was would that have been Billy Davis Mark II? Oh, God. Anyway, yeah, we got absolutely humped in the next year and ruined it all. The memory of that game and the feeling of being in that high end when Osborne scored the goal is something that will kind of sustain me for many, many years.
The good news is that it was actually the year before that Forest lost 5-0, but they did then lose 1-0 the season after, 3-0 the season after that, 2-0 the season after that. Basically, Paul, Forest don't really like going to Pride Park that much, but there was that memorable, what I would call the Lee Camp game. That was a pretty good one.
Yeah. I'd just like to add to what Nick said, really, because I think what a lot of us do, I mean, I wouldn't class myself as a Forest fan, but you can't help supporting the team you cover. And you do get invested in the team. You do want to see them do well. And one of my favourite moments of covering Forest for almost 15 years now, I think, is very definitely that Ben Osborne goal. But it was all the other stuff that went around it again, but in different ways. The fact that his dad, Damon, is a massive, massive Derby fan and was in the Forest end going absolutely crackers when Benny scored.
And it was his birthday, wasn't it? It was his dad's birthday on the day. I remember Ben tweeting that. Would like to wish my dad at Bomber Aussie, a lifelong Derby fan, a happy birthday. Hope you had a good one, big man.
and more than that, he got another birthday present in that all his car tyres had been stabbed when he got back to his car. Somebody clearly knew his circumstances and had literally just vandalised his car, but he said he didn't really care. I'd be interested to know where he lies now, if he kind of leans back towards Derby again now, or if he's still got an affinity for Forest now that his lad's moved on. But that was a heck of a day. And what made it even better as well was just that was the one literal few seconds where you saw Psycho. He was Stuart Pearson every other moment, but in the moment that goal went in, with that sort of angry stroke, joyous face, the fist pumping in the air, and it was the one moment where you felt you let the facade drop and let the inner Psycho out and went absolutely ballistic on the touchline, and that was just a great moment. There's a separate debate, I suppose, to be had on whether he should have let the inner Psycho out more often, because a lot of the players spoke afterwards, after his tenure had ended, about what a mellow, calm character he was. They'd literally produced terrible performances and he'd never go into the dressing room and bollock anybody. He'd just, you know, say, oh, don't worry, lads, I'll be better in the next game. And I wonder if his tenure might have been slightly different had he just managed or just let the beast out a little bit and put a little bit of fear of God into the players, because that was a weapon in his armoury, without a doubt, and he never seemed to want to use it. I never quite understood that.
It does seem to, throughout his kind of managerial career, it seemed to be like a very conscious decision not to be Psycho and things like and try to be more of a kind of, I don't know, cerebral coach. In as much as he tries slightly odd things, the kind of most obvious one being trying to play David James up front at Manchester City. So it did seem like he was extremely aware that people thought of him as, you know, Psycho with the big thighs and the roar and the hammer of a left foot, without kind of taking him seriously as a sort of, I don't know, thinker of the game. And it was also, obviously, that game was, I think, two games before he eventually got sacked. And, almost certainly, if Forrest had lost that game, he would have been sacked then. And it's just sort of to delay the inevitable. But while I didn't necessarily want Pearce to be Forrest manager for various reasons, that game and the moment he came out of the tunnel in for his first game. I forget who that was against, but
Blackpool,
yeah, where he came out of the tunnel, and it, there's no way that this would have been choreographed. But the moment he came out the tunnel was just at the moment where the PA dropped the sort of the music of Mull of Kintyre, and it was the bit where the fans took over and started singing it. Which, you know, if it was choreographed, then congratulations to whoever did it. But I would imagine that Forest were such a shambles behind the scenes at that stage that no one could have choreographed anything quite that perfectly. But that moment and the Benny Osborne goal were made his entire spell as manager, Forest manager, worth it, really.
Yeah, and he'll always be kind of linked with games against Derby, I think, for supporters of our vintage. Back to 2021, Paul. In terms of team news for Friday night's game, presumably Graben, Amiobi, McKenna, all unlikely to be fit in time.
Yeah, Amiobi's back in training. I'm not sure whether he'll be involved or not. They seem to be quite cautious with him. I guess that's because it was a knee injury. Graben won't be. That at least is what Houghton said last night. Whether he's trying to keep an ace up his sleeve, I don't know. But he says he definitely won't be ready. And McKenna's still not back in training. But it's an interesting one because the performance last night, I imagine he made a few changes very much with a view to an eye on Rotherham and the type of game that was going to be. I'm thinking about the inclusion of Ryan Yates and Gaetan Bong in particular. They were just brought in to add a little bit of a extra physical dynamic and a bit of strength to cope with a very direct, very robust, very well organised and good at what they do Rotherham side. And it worked a treat, but the performances of both of those players has probably left him with a real decision to make, because I don't know if he already had in mind what his Derby team would be, if he was thinking about bringing perhaps a refreshed James Garner back in, or if he was thinking about having Yuri Ribeiro back rampaging up and down the left side. But the performance of those two is really giving him food for thought. I'm not sure he could drop either of them. Cyrus Christie was brilliant as well. The two centre halves were outstanding. But those two, perhaps because they were brought back into the team, were really the ones that stood out and really, you know, perhaps show that Houghton does know what he's doing after all. When you look at the team selections he's made in recent times, you know, Glenn Murray's first start against Wickham prompted a lot of derision on Twitter, and then he scored two goals. Then you had, you know, there was a few people, not so many, questioning Alex Mighton's inclusion against Blackburn. Then he scores the winner. And then obviously Ryan Yates pops up last night, having been brought back into the side with a big goal. So maybe Chris Houghton does know what he's doing, and hopefully that'll be evident again on Friday night.
Yeah, we'll find out at 6:45 on Friday night when the team news drops and Paul wishes that he could turn off the replies on his Twitter feed. 6:45 is the kickoff time for Friday's game. You knew that already, listener. We'll react to it in next week's show.
It's a right old scrap for the ball, and Yates comes out with it. That flew in from Ryan Yates. And Nottingham Forest are on the rise under Chris Houghton. Two-thirds of the game gone, and they are powered ahead.
So, on Tuesday night, Forest continued their impressive recent form by picking up 3 points from their trip to Rotherham. Ryan Yates' second-half goal, enough to give the good guys the W. It means, as we record, Forest are 10 points clear of the relegation zone and merely 10 points from the playoff places. A question from Twitter comes from George, who quite reasonably wants to know, how will Forest decide which fans are allowed to go to the playoff final in May? Nick, I'm trying to talk myself out of the fact that we are now on a promotion push rather than a relegation battle. Am I crackers?
I think you should talk yourself into it. I mean, that there are, as we all know at the moment, that while there's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, we've still got another few months of of drudgery and unpleasantness. So I don't know, a little bit of perhaps over optimistic hope can't hurt. I suppose actually it can hurt when it inevitably falls apart again, but you can probably sort of comfort yourself in the knowledge that it's not going to fall apart quite as sort of emotionally and as painfully as last season. Yeah, go for it. So we're gonna get the playoffs. We'll get promoted. Champions League in 3 or 4 years. There you go.
Excellent. Looking forward to that. Paul, I know you're a bit more circumspect, particularly given the games that Forest have got coming up in the next couple of weeks. David wants to know, where do you genuinely think we'll finish at the end of this season? If you had to put a position on it now, what would you go for?
I wouldn't put it past them finishing 9th or 10th. You know, I think the way they're going, they've got some good form together. They are in probably playoff form, if we're entirely honest. They've only lost 2 in 14. They've only conceded 2 goals in the last 7 games, 5 clean sheets. Chris Hughton's got them playing with the kind of identity you would expect from his sides. You know, we spoke to fans of Brighton in particular who told us that he was going to be this very much this kind of manager where the priority would be to tighten things up at the back, to get them organised and disciplined and then to build from there. And that has very much proved to be what's happened. Forest are very difficult to beat now. They don't look like they're going to lose very many matches. They don't look like they're going to score many goals at the minute, but that's not because of a lack of chances. They create chances, and if they can find their killer touch, then they'll be a real force to be reckoned with. I just think, sadly, it's probably a little bit too late, but that doesn't mean we can't enjoy the rest of the season and hopefully, you know, some positive times to come. They have got a very tough run of fixtures coming up. After the Derby game, there's Luton, which isn't perhaps quite so hard in terms of the fixtures beyond that, because after that they've got Watford at home, Watford away, Reading and Norwich at home, Brentford away, Cardiff away, and they aren't going to be easy games given Forest's record against the top six. Obviously, there's an opportunity there to prove me entirely wrong. If they can go and start beating teams in the top six, they'll naturally make up ground on them, and I'll eat some humble pie. But I just think that without playing down the vast improvement that he's inspired and how positive things feel, that they've probably left it a little bit too late. It would take something absolutely remarkable for them to get in the playoff places, I'm afraid. But this is one occasion where I would be very, very happy to be proved wrong.
What about Rotherham then, Paul? You were on hand for The Athletic. I was covering another game, so I didn't see the full 90 minutes. But from the highlights I've watched, it felt maybe that Forest were a tad lucky. There could have been a double offside with the goal. Rotherham hit the bar, missed a couple of chances. It wasn't a straightforward win by any means.
I think they deserved it. I think they were the better side. In fact, I'm pretty certain they were the better side. They had more chances. They had more better passages of play than Rotherham. In typical Forest fashion, it was themselves that, you know, they didn't make it easy for themselves when they had opportunities to do so. There were so many close but no cigar moments. You know, Anthony Knockhart had a couple of good chances and was denied by saves. Brian Yates had a header over the bar, even though he's offside. Glenn Murray, you know, he had the ball in the net once and came close on 2 other occasions and again was caught offside. So these were all really fine margins, but all really positive moments. Forest set up for exactly the kind of game it was going to be. And I understand where people are coming from when they complain that there's this notion that Forest should be able to go to Rotherham and impose their will on the game and make it the kind of game that they want it to be. But I think that's a little bit naive. Rotherham were going to play in a certain way no matter what Forest did. You can talk about them trying to keep the ball themselves or, you know, playing a way themselves, but they're always going to have to set up to play against a very direct, very robust Rotherham side. And they did that and they coped with it very, very well. It was only really in the final stages when it was real back-to-the-wall stuff and Forest perhaps sat a little bit too deep that Rotherham did have real chances and they did hit the bar and could very easily have got a point. But I think overall it was a very astute tactical performance and a win that was thoroughly deserved, even if some familiar frustrations probably remained at the end of it. And you just love it. I mean, it's the ideal time to do it on Friday. But just for Forest to go and do what they do, particularly, you know, we saw them play really well at Swansea, for example, create loads of chances, fail to put any of them away and lose. It'd be great for them to go to Derby, produce the same level of performance, stick a few of those chances away and keep the momentum going at the expense of one of their biggest rivals. That is the perfect scenario. That would be the perfect time for them to put this sort of lack of killer touch to bed. They've only scored 27 goals, I think, this 31 games, and that kind of epitomises the area that they still need to improve in if they want to make that step from being mid-table to challenging for promotion again.
Yeah, and that's very much the focus of Paul's piece in the wake of that game against Rotherham. So could do with being more clinical up front, Nick. And we mentioned that Lyle Taylor's the top scorer and he hasn't scored in ages, but they are sharing the load quite effectively. Always think that that's quite a good sign for a team if you're not overly reliant on one player in the way that Forest were with Lewis Crabbin last season.
Yeah, it's a, kind of partly a consequence of kind of injuries, because Graben hasn't been has been in and out of the team with various ailments. But yeah, it's as you say, it's certainly better for the current scenario anyway that Forest aren't especially reliant on one single player. You'd like to. Knockhart's been sort of unlucky is a slightly iffy word, but he's, you know, he's been very close certainly to scoring in the last three or four games, really. He obviously hit the bar. He hit the bar last night. He certainly came very close, and he came close against Blackburn as well. So you would have thought that at some point one of those will go in. And Yates has obviously scored last night, and he's certainly got that late break into the box run about him. He could obviously do with improving his finishing, but he's still a young midfielder. He's a work in progress. I think you probably like to see more goals from players in that kind of number 10 position. But yeah, if you know Lolly or Amiobi, if he's back in the team, if they could grab a couple, then that would be very handy indeed. But yeah, as you say, very handy that we're not relying on one single player.
A couple of individuals I wanted to get some thoughts on. Firstly, Paul, Brees Samba, is he back? We saw that magnificent penalty save against Blackburn on Saturday. A couple of important saves against Rotherham too. He's the king of Twitter, but it feels like he's got his mojo back on the pitch too.
Yeah, absolutely. It was hard to escape the notion last night. In fact, I think I tweeted about it at one point that everything that came into his box last night, he was just decisive and determined and confident and came to get. And if ever there was a game where you needed to do that, it was against Rotherham. He was brilliant. I think as a central defender, if you're Joe Worrell or Tobias Figueiredo, the sense of confidence you must get from having a player with his level of assurance behind you must be great. It must give you kind of confidence and belief that you don't really need to worry that if there is a high ball into the box and you're not challenging for it, that the keeper's going to come and tidy it up. He didn't have too many saves to make, but he was still busy, if that makes any sense. He had a night where he had a lot of work to do, even if much of it wasn't actually stopping shots on goal. He kind of was more of a custodian of his penalty area, if you like, and he did that very, very well. And he very much does feel like the Samba that we were used to last season. He looks like he's got his confidence back, and he's very much playing with that little bit of swagger that always made him a fan's favourite. Again, without labouring the point too much, I think it's another reason why it'd be great to see fans back in the stadium, just purely because he's somebody that thrives off that, and it'd be great to see that relationship resume.
Yeah, Nick, we spoke a couple of weeks ago about how it can be difficult to find a connection to Forest players these days. He's kind of the exception to that, isn't he? I mentioned the Twitter, him sharing clips of himself time-wasting with a poo emoji and a house emoji always makes me laugh. Just the fact that he looks so resplendent in his all luminous yellow kit. And now that he's back to being one of the division's most reliable goalkeepers, you sort of can't help but fall in love with him a bit.
Yeah, I mean, we're all Forest fans listening to this, and well, if you're not, then you're a slightly curious person. So you will have no doubt already seen the clip that Matt's referring to, but it is an absolute sensation in time wasting. He kind of he's taking a goal kick and he kind of puts the ball outside the 6-yard box, and then when it's pointed out, no, you need to move it back a foot or so, Brees, he kind of does
points at the ball, points at the ground, points at his gloves.
Sorry, I'm magnificent. I am quite new to this. You're going to have to walk me through all the exact rules. It's a little bit difficult to get bogged down in the kind of minutiae. And he also does, I mean, he always does this, but he does a sort of almost Simone Zaza-esque run-up to when he takes a goal kick. Little kind of tippy-toe thing, doesn't seem to get much momentum, and then absolutely leathers it. Yeah, and Paul was saying he was very, against Rotherham, he was very proactive in coming for crosses and dominating the penalty area and such. He's also quite proactive in distribution as well. When he would come out for those crosses, he would very, very quickly have his head up and be, it would not all the time. He was kind of selective about it, but he would kind of quickly get the throw out or the kick to, you know, to the often to the right wing. Didn't always work, but it was good to see that he was being a little bit more decisive about it. And yeah, as Paul says, that you would think speaks to his confidence being pretty high at the moment.
And Paul, you spoke to Joe Lolley after the game. He seems to be confident that he can get back to his best form as the team continue to improve. That could be key to increasing Forest goals output, I suppose, if we can get kind of 2 years ago Joe Lolley.
Yeah, it's a curious one with Joe, isn't it? I mean, he had these injury problems over the summer that's kind of set him back. He admitted it affected his confidence, and he's such an honest bloke, Joe, and he's quite an intelligent fella, and I think he's quite analytical of himself. And I think he accepted that it was kind of good for him to have a little break from the action and just have time to recover his physical sharpness and perhaps even his mental sharpness as well. And you do feel that he has perhaps got both back now. Certainly the performance at Wickham when he came off the bench, he was outstanding in that little cameo he had. He almost scored with his first touch and then he set up another goal. And yeah, to completely agree with you, you're absolutely right. You do want, or you do hope that we are going to see the Joe Lolley of old back in the side and doing what he does best, because in his pomp in only last season and the season before, he was one of the best performers in the Championship. He was one of the most creative and dangerous wide players in the division. And, there were Premier League clubs looking at him. Aston Villa were keen. And you could understand why. Obviously, I'm not hoping that Forrest put a for sale sign in his head by any means, but it'd be great if he got back to that kind of performance level where Premier League clubs were sitting up and taking notice. And there's no reason why it can't happen. But, you know, I guess his first step is to get himself back into the starting lineup on a regular basis, because that is one area of the pitch where Forrest are blessed with a heck of a lot of options when you look at the likes of Freeman and Mighton, who's also done very well. Amiobi, who's injured. Knockhart starting to look a bit more like what you expected he would be when he first signed. There's a whole, you know, Krivinovic as well in that number 10 role has done well. So there's a whole clutch of players all fighting for three spots in the side in that 4-2-3-1 formation. But that perhaps in itself is one of the reasons why Forest have flourished, because there is that competition for places now, and it's inspiring better from a lot of players, I think.
Briefly on the Blackburn game, which has also happened since last we met. Nick, a third home clean sheet in a row and all the hallmarks of a Chris Hughton team victory here, I think. Sort of played well early on and then just defended stoutly as Blackburn looked for the equaliser.
Yeah, I think we mentioned it last week, but I mean, Chris Hughton is being very Chris Hughton at the moment. It's kind of exactly, as I think we mentioned earlier, it's exactly what we were sort of sold or what we expected of him. And another clean sheet. I think in the these sort of form table things are always quite arbitrary, but in the last 10 games, nobody in the division has conceded fewer goals than Forrest. Third in the 2021 form table. It's exactly you're always slightly skeptical about how much these things were actually thought about when the decision was made, but this is exactly what you hire Chris Hughton to do. You know it tightens up the team, makes the defense very strong, not always the most sort of, you know, attractive or pretty to watch, but my God, you'd rather have that than the alternative.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple of things, Paul, that I wanted your opinion on from the Blackburn game. The first was the performance of Alex Mighton, who was the subject of your post-match piece. But also, I noticed that the club piped in some crowd noise into the stadium for this game. How was that received in the press box?
It was curious, you know. I'll be honest with you. I couldn't make up my mind about it. And I'd be interested to know what it was like for people watching on television, because in the ground, and I don't mean this as a criticism at all, but it was just the faintness of it that rankled with me a little bit. It didn't seem quite right when you're actually there. Maybe it's the slight tinniness of the tannoy, but equally, I know from when I've watched games on television, I'm an absolute stickler for making sure it's the version that's got the crowd noise on it, because I just think it makes it better when you're watching on television. So it's a tough one. I think the club have done the right thing by trying it. I think it probably does work to some degree if you're watching it on television. It might even help the players. They all seem quite positive about it. And Chris Hughton certainly felt that it made a difference. So if it helps the players and it helps, you know, the manager in his eyes, and it makes it feel better when it's on television, then I'm all for it. But actually being sat in the centre of it, it all felt a bit curious, and maybe it's something that you'll get used to over time. But hopefully that isn't the case, because hopefully fans will be back sooner rather than later. But in the meantime, then maybe it's something that could be a useful tool.
I kind of agree with Paul there, and I sort of feel the same way about the any kind of piped in noise as I do about the, and apologies for bringing another sport into this, but about the Barmy Army for the England cricket team, who are an absolutely dreadful bunch of self-important bores who think that they are kind of more important, seem to think they're more important than any other fans just because they've got some trumpeter playing. But the players love them. And if it helps the players in any way at all, I, magnanimous soul that I am perfectly prepared to put aside my own prejudices and welcome them in. So yeah, if the, as Paul says, if the piped in crowd noise helps in any respect at all, then all for it.
Are you watching games with fake crowd noise or without, Nick? Or do you mix it up a bit?
I try where there's an option without. Which is still a bit weird, but it doesn't kind of, it's not enormously intrusive. It just sounds a bit odd. So yeah, when there's an option, just stick with the commentator and the audible swearing from the touchline.
Mighton then, Paul, mentioned he was the subject of your piece. Yes. Lots of nice quotes in there from some of his teammates about his potential and a glimpse that he's maybe starting to fulfil it, or at least get the opportunity to do so now.
Yeah, as much as I'd like to see Alex Mighton playing every week, because he's a great player to watch. He's somebody that gets you on the edge of your seat whenever he gets on the ball, because you never know what he's going to do. I'm not convinced he knows what he's going to do half the time, but he's just such an unpredictable talent, and he's got that burst of pace. He's got that bit of trickery with that great hair he's got. He almost looks like he's in kinetic motion before he's even moved. He looks like a sort of cartoon character, sort of, you know, Billy Whiz type. He's great. I like the way that Chris Hughton's handling him. I can see it from two ways. I want to see him play every week because he's brilliant, but I also understand why Chris Hughton's been a little bit more cautious and just sort of dipping him in and out of the side. I don't think Rotherham was the perfect game to be involved in, because, you know, without it being a criticism, he's not the physically most strong of players. He's not the biggest of fellas, and I think a robust physical battle perhaps wouldn't have been for him. But the thing that stood out for me in that whole article was, yes, well, lots of other people had very positive things to say about him. It's what he says himself. He seems to be so grounded and so level-headed, and he's got the perfect balance of ambition and drive and realism as well. I think he probably understands the position he's in, and he's quite patient about getting more of an opportunity. His dad, Eddie, was talking to some of my former colleagues at the Nottingham Post. Eddie was a really, really bright talent when he was a kid in the 80s. He played, forgive me, I can't remember if it was city or county schools, but he represented Nottingham in one or the other, and was regarded as being one of the brightest talents of his generation, and was at Forest Academy for a short while. He didn't quite make it, but it wasn't through a lack of talent. And I wonder if there's somehow, you know, a little bit of desire there from Eddie just to make sure that Alex walks the right path and doesn't perhaps, you know, let things slip in the same way that he did, that he makes the most of the talent he's got. We actually asked Eddie to talk for the article, but he gave me the most polite no I've ever had in my entire life, I think. He was a very kind, very friendly man, but didn't want to get involved in the article. But everything you hear about him suggests that he's a very good influence on Alex, who's still only just 18. It's hard to remember that sometimes, given that it was a year ago that he made his debut at Chelsea and did so in Premier League company, and didn't look like he shouldn't have been in that company. He fitted right in, and I think he's somebody that Forest fans can be very excited about seeing develop and evolve in the Forest side in the next few years, hopefully.
It's also, I mean, when you have a player as exciting as he is, then it's very easy for, as a fan, to kind of demand that he's in the team every week. Mm. And while I'm very much not comparing them in terms of talent levels, Phil Foden was in a sort of similar situation 2 or 3 years ago, where everyone was desperate for him to be in the Man City team a lot more, but Guardiola was very cautious about him.
odd games here and there, very much eased him into the team, and you know, basically now look at him, he's one of the best players in the country. So again, the talent levels are very, very different, but the way that that Houghton seems to be managing him by giving him, you know, a few games in the first team, but not putting too much pressure on him, and not too putting, you know, making his workload too much, or you know, basically wearing him out too young, I think is exactly the right thing to do.
Yeah, very sensible. Alex Mighton got a big future. Let's hope that it's at Forest, at least for the foreseeable. All right, not long left in today's pod, but still time for this. Did they really play for Forest? We'll get to this week's game soon enough, but first we need to address the huge controversy surrounding last week's game. Listener, you'll remember the subject was Ryan Bertrand, who has indeed played for Forest, but has also, contrary to our quizmaster's assertion, played for England at a tournament. Many thanks to listener Stuart Levy, who pointed out the error via Twitter and asked whether an incorrect clue invalidates the game. It absolutely does, Stuart. It also calls into question the trustworthiness of the quizmaster, I'm afraid. Nick, what on earth happened here? How do you explain such a sloppy error? Were you nodding off when they taught you about fact-checking in journalism school?
You got it two-footed there.
Yeah, it's who won last week? Is it was it you, Paul?
Yes.
This sounds
irrelevant, invalidated this, game.
This really does sound like the bitter complaints of a losing quizzer.
It sounds like Boris Johnson talking about journalism.
I confess I may have fallen into the trap of assuming that, because the reserve left-back never plays at international tournaments, so I confess I may have fallen into the trap of seeing his name on the Euro 2016 squad list and just assuming he didn't appear. So I can only apologise to the whole quizzing and Nottingham Forest community, and I will endeavour to make sure that such an egregious error doesn't happen again.
Yeah, never assume, makes an ass out of you and me, etc. and so on. You can have a shot at redemption now, but let's be clear about this, Nick. This is a crucial moment for this podcast, so please, let's get it right.
Okay, so this is, for any new listeners, this is Did They Really Play for Forest? It's five clues, and you have to guess the identity of a relatively famous player who played for Forest, but we don't necessarily remember it. So, the first clue. In my first season in England, I played alongside Viv Anderson.
Ooh, first season in England would indicate it's maybe not an English player. Paul, you got anything?
No, not at this stage.
No, I've got some things bubbling away, but I'm not quite prepared to make a guess yet. Can we have another clue, please?
Okay, clue number two. In that season, I won a trophy under a former Forest manager.
Ooh. Right. Okay. Okay, it's getting a little bit clearer now. Paul, anything coming to mind?
Well, I'm glad it's getting clearer for you, because I've got nothing.
I was going to say somebody called Kjetil Oswald.
Who is that? I don't know. No idea who that is.
Seven appearances between 86 and 88, but no, it's not him.
Sure, the famous Kjetil Oswald. Yes, no, it's not him. So, clue number three, and one of the reasons I chose him for this episode, I also played for Derby County.
Okay, so I'm kind of piecing this together, Paul, and thinking it's a Man United player who played under Big Ron, as well as playing for Forest in Derby, but I'm still scratching my head. Obviously, it's not Neil Webb. You got anything, Paul?
I can't think of his name. I've got an inkling about a random goalie, but I've got nothing more than that.
Les Seeley?
No.
Okay, sorry.
Matt, you can't attack me so aggressively and then guess players who just didn't play for Forest. Come on.
Guesses can't be wrong, though, can they, by their very nature, whereas facts can.
Wow.
I'm loving this.
That is a shoulder-dislocating reach there, Matt.
Let's have another clue, please.
Okay, this one might make it a bit clearer. I am currently a manager in America.
Ooh. Hmm. Does that make it any clearer, I wonder? In America, you say. Just trying to think of some teams in America that we might know. Paul, anything coming to mind here?
I'm having one of those stinkers this week where I haven't even got a name to offer. I've got nothing. My mind is blank. I'm looking out over a barren landscape of nothing.
I'm in a pretty similar position, to be perfectly honest. Do we have any more clues, Nick? Is there one left?
Yeah, one more.
Okay,
one more.
Let's do it.
I only made three appearances for Forest in the ill-fated 98-99 season under Ron, Big Ron, Atkinson.
Is it Richard Gough?
It's not. I can see why you went there.
No, I don't think it's him. Paul, have you got a guess?
He made more than three appearances. I know he did, so I know it's wrong, but I was going to say Olsen because he manages out there, doesn't he?
Yeah, I thought Olsen too, and then I thought maybe John Harkes.
It's John Harkes. Yes. Well done. Yeah, I thought we were going to get. I don't think we've had a complete stumper yet that has got both of you after all five clues, but that's what I was hoping to get there then. But yeah, that's a good one.
That was a really good way of wording the clues, actually, Nick, because the Viv Anderson Ron Atkinson thing was Chef Wed, wasn't it? Not Man United.
It was. Yeah, the 1991 League Cup they won, and it was also. Also in the final, do you know who was on the bench for the Sheffield Wednesday in that final? Didn't come on, but he was on the bench.
No, I don't know who was on Sheffield Wednesday's bench in the 1991 League Cup final.
Very, very, very famous ex-former Forest player. Scored a very, very, very big goal in Forest's history.
Jemson?
No, much bigger than that.
No.
Francis?
I don't know.
It was Trevor Francis. Trevor Francis was on the bench.
Yes. Did they have Asda as their shirt sponsor at that time?
Yes, it would have been pre-Sanderson days, yeah, wouldn't it? So I would have thought days, it was probably Asda, yeah. The crucial, maybe if I'd used that as a clue, then you wouldn't got it.
Would listen, I think you've redeemed yourself there, Nick. That was a fun game, and I feel like all those clues were on the money. So well done.
I'm not sure it was a fun game. I'm gonna put that out there. I feel terrible here. I feel like
there's a lot of bad losers in this game. You know.
Yeah, that's true.
Matt chipping off because he lost last week. You declaring the game's rubbish because you didn't win this week, Paul.
I don't think the game's rubbish. I think Paul and I are rubbish, and that can damage your self-confidence after a while.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah,
right. So maybe give us Stuart Pearce next week and let's see if we can get that. Before we go, Nick, what are you working on at the moment for The Athletic, please?
So I think I mentioned it, may have mentioned it a few weeks ago, but I have interviewed James Coppinger, who... is in his final of 17 seasons for Doncaster Rovers. He's coming up to his, I think, 600th league game for Donny. So I think that piece will be going out at some point next week. There's a little bit about Forest, and I also spoke to Sean O'Driscoll for the piece for a few memories about working with James. He said he gets one of the questions he gets, or one of the things that he gets most is people stopping him, Forest fans stopping him in the street and saying, "You were the one that got away. If only you'd have stayed for a little bit longer." I think that should be going out next week. Also, it already out. I think I mentioned it again last week. Is the podcast about Justin Fashanu, which is based on a brilliant article by Adam Crafton. But we did a pod version of it, which went out this week. Search for Beyond the Headline in your favourite pod provider, or indeed listen on The Athletic.
Yeah, well worth checking out both the podcast and the article for that. Paul, we've mentioned your Alex Mighton piece and the post Rotherham bit. I guess it's all eyes on Friday now for you.
Yep, there'll be a match piece after the game on Friday night, but also following up from the Chris Commons piece, there was another former Forest player from that era who perhaps partially because he read that Commons piece and was inspired by it, was happy to share a few stories of his own about perhaps being a little bit misunderstood about his time at Forest. So keep an eye out for that early next week. It really is another hopefully interesting story as much as the Commons piece was. He spoke very honestly and told me a few things I didn't know about his time at Forest, so that one should be interesting.
Excellent. Listener, if you're fast and you're not currently an Athletic subscriber, you've just about got time to take advantage of the 50% off offer that we are running. It expires, though, on the 25th of February, so you will have to be quick. Just go to theathletic.com/forestpod for all the details on that. And many thanks to Nick, to Paul, and to producers Lucy and Aidy for their help this week. We'll catch up with you again next week when we're basking in the glory of a win at Pride Park. Until then, take care of yourselves. We'll speak to you soon.
The Athletic.